Your presence today is much appreciated and an encouragement to others. Thank you for being here. It was the very worst time of all times to live on earth. It's a very big statement. But it's hard to argue with that in light of the words of Genesis chapter 6, verse 5 to 7. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man, whom I've created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I've made them. The Bible bursts open with a glorious account of the masterful creation of this world. And then a few pages later, this. It follows from earlier in the chapter a statement that said that man began to multiply on the earth. So as man multiplied on the earth, so did wickedness. And in a way, it shows just how pervasive evil was, that there was only one lone contrast. In all the world, there was one exception. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. Have you ever felt like that you were the only person on the earth serving God? Noah was. It's not a feeling, it was reality. So this year we're focused on the narratives of the Old Testament, specifically looking at the ancient people that show us God. These are the people whose record God has left for us by the Holy Spirit so that we can understand our relationship with God. And we're looking here in these sermons on Sundays at some of the fundamental humans. That's what you have to call them, these people we encounter in the book of Genesis whose lives are highlighted for us. They're the fundamental humans that teach us so much about being human, so much about God and being the people of God. Now, our readings are getting way ahead of us, and that's okay, in part because it's snow and ice, but also we're really taking our time and looking and dissecting even to some extent these characters in the book of Genesis, and we're going to keep up that slow pace for several weeks. And so our readings will run ahead and that will be fine. But we're going to stop and reflect upon these characters that are found in these chapters in Genesis. And here we come to Noah. Last man standing. So in Genesis chapter 6, consider how that we are given this depiction of a wicked world and a righteous man. There is something that people have said down through the centuries. We've heard it in our lifetime. Look how wicked the world has gotten to be. It's just a favorite motto of every generation. Look how bad the world is. Well, for all the ages since these events we're reading about here, these things have not been true. I mean, we're taking it at face value. Every intent of the thoughts of men's heart was evil continually, save the one man. I struggle a little bit on how to understand Noah's family because there are no references in the biblical text regarding their walk with God. Not saying that they were not. They were preserved on the ark, as we'll see. Were they walking with God like Noah was? We can think that. That's fine. But the biblical text just really focuses on Noah. So that's what we're going to do. The earth was filled with violence, we're told, in chapter 6. How's your neighborhood regarding violence? How many fights broke out in the streets in the last week in your neighborhood? How many murders have you had in the last month in your neighborhood? We have a ways to go, don't we, before we get to this point. Some people have had the inclination to believe that, and are often taught this by some teachers, that the world is going to get really bad and just worse and worse morally and spiritually, and then Jesus will come in judgment. There's no biblical indication that the final judgment will occur when the world is saturated with evil. That's something we've come up with. That's our reasoning. The day will come as a thief in the night, so there will not be clues that will give it away. There's no biblical teaching that says that this is going to repeat itself because of those conditions. We do know, according to 2 Peter chapter 3, that God will, like he destroyed the world with a flood, destroy the world with fire. But the conditions are not talked about. The characteristics that prompts that are not talked about. So let us make sure that we understand that. And as we see this wicked world and we see this righteous Noah, let's not fail to see God in all of this. And what did God experience? God's heart was broken. He's troubled with regret, even. And though God is spirit, the Bible accommodates us in understanding him. And here it does by saying something about God's eyes. He first sees that which disturbs him in chapter 6, verse 5. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great. We think of seeing, we think of eyes. It's the idea of God observing and comprehending. But even chapter 6, verse 8 of Noah, it says, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Look what God was seeing and how it was troubling to him. But also that in the midst of all this dark evil, God sees Noah. And what that must have meant to God. So here lies the main point of the beginning of this account. There was one man who lived righteously before God and walked with God in a world gone mad with sin. We should never underestimate the enticing power of sin. We should never underestimate the danger of worldly influences. But it's also a tragic mistake to be fooled into believing that the world is irresistible. That the world and all of its wickedness is magnetized and we're just these little pieces of metal and we can't help but to be pulled into it. No, it's the wrong way to look at the world. It's more like, sorry, this is the thing that I came up with. It's more like the little Debbie rack at the grocery store. Now, don't act like you don't know. Now, asterisk here, footnote, I'm not paralleling eating a little Debbie cake to sin, okay? But regarding me, it's something I don't need to do much, okay? But whether it's Little Debbie or one of those other snack cake brands, but Little Debbie just seems to be like the most aggressive marketing campaign and the most creative. They've got a cake for every holiday, okay? I probably got a groundhog cake. I don't know. But they put it right there in the aisle. But there's always a path around it. You can bypass the Little Debbie cakes. You don't have to buy them. In that way, there is a parallel to sin. Sin is enticing, but it does not control our will. Noah shows that. The Bible, on many of occasions, gives us an extreme example to make a point. If Noah could live a godly life in this situation, then anyone can live a godly life. Because it's not going to get any worse than that. And I think we can draw some conclusions in light of what Genesis reveals about Noah. That he must not have compromised. That he must not have condoned the wicked around him. And he must not have developed a disposition of self-righteousness, because that would have repulsed God. He found favor in God's eyes. This incredible balance of being a righteous man, but yet his refusal to sin did not itself create within him a monstrous spirit of him being better than everybody else, which is so vividly condemned in the ministry of Jesus as he encounters scribes and Pharisees. Surrounded by evil, Noah did not succumb to its pressures. And in the end, all that evil was removed from his environment. Because God is going to act, as he says here. Pick up with me in chapter 6, verse 11. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. He says later in verse 17, for behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, and your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. There's an interesting wordplay here. We're told here in verse 12 that mankind had corrupted the world with sin. That term in the Hebrew at its root means decay or ruin. Man had ruined the world with sin. And then we're told in verse 13 that God said because of this, he would destroy them with the earth. That term destroy in our English Bibles is from that same Hebrew root. And what this is telling us, because mankind had ruined the world with sin, God will ruin it physically by destroying all living things except those who would be preserved on the ark. Humans ruined the world, and so God's going to ruin it or destroy it. I mean, here we are just a few pages into the Bible after God making all that he'd made and making all those animals and those incredible creatures, and now he's doing this. What a tragic part of Scripture. But not everyone's going to be destroyed, and not every living thing. God would spare Noah and his family and breathing animals by preserving their species two by two. And to be saved, Noah would have to prepare a floating boat, an ark. It's not going to be a sailing vessel. The point is just that it has to float. And God gave him specific instructions, which are stated there in chapter 6, regarding the dimensions of the ark and the materials of the ark. And Noah would have to build it himself. It would be a mammoth undertaking to build this ark. And then there's the gathering of the animals. And then there's the acquisition of all the foodstuffs to feed the animals and feed the family. And there's a refrain in the reading. We see it mentioned three times in a row. In chapter 6, verse 22, Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. And then chapter 7, verse 5. And Noah did all that the Lord had commanded him. And then down, as they're going into the ark, verse 9 of chapter 7. Two and two, male and female, went into the ark with Noah as God had commanded Noah. Over and over in this seventh chapter, there is this reference regarding the animals and regarding his family, that they went with Noah. He's the leader. And he's the leader because he's a righteous man who walked with God. And it was because they're with Noah that they're preserved. Noah obeyed and obeyed completely. That's why Hebrews chapter 11, enlisting him among other people of the Old Testament who displayed their faith, says, by faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this, he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness that comes by faith. That took a lot of faith in God. And that faith took a lot of work. What are we tempted to think as we live by faith? I'm going to trust God and other people are going to live wickedly. And because I'm doing that, things are going to be smoother for me. I'm going to have it maybe not so easy, but I'll have it easier than those who don't believe in God. This man had to build an ark with three levels that was wider than a football field and longer than a football field. And he did not have DeWalt tools. Faith is not an easy path. You could almost say that living by faith is harder. Because one way it is. It's uphill all the way. And then the flood waters came. And what a flood it was. In Genesis 7, verse 10. After 7 days, the waters of the flood came upon the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened. You get that picture? It didn't just start raining. Water exploded from under the earth. What are known as aquifers today. The water exploded from underneath and then poured from above from the sky. And rain fell upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On the very same day, Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife and the three wives of the sons with them entered the ark, they and every beast according to its kind, and all the livestock according to their kinds, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth according to its kind, and every bird according to its kind, every winged creature. They went into the ark with Noah. Two and two of all flesh, in which there was the breath of life. And in verse 17, the flood continued 40 days on the earth. The waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed so mightily on the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed above the mountains, covering them 15 cubits deep. And all flesh died that moved on the earth. Birds, livestock, beasts, all swarming creatures that swarm on the earth, and all mankind. Everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. He blotted out every living thing that was on the face of the ground, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens. They were blotted out from the earth. Only Noah was left, and those who were with him in the ark. And the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. We have, in what we have in our Bibles, designated these chapters now. And here we are in just to the seventh chapter of the Bible. And isn't it amazing how succinct this record is and all that's covered? But look how repetitive the description is. All died. Everything that had breath outside the ark died. Could there be a more complete description of total destruction by water? Every breathing creature of man and beast perished. And we thought we saw a lot of destruction by water in October of 2024. We thought we saw landscape change drastically as a result of wind and flood. Can you imagine what this was like? Besides the Swannanoa and the French Broad swelling way out of their banks, can you imagine water 22 and a half feet above Mount Mitchell? This is a picture of complete judgment, but also in the midst of it, perfect mercy. Because at the beginning of the destruction of the flood, there are three references to the Ark of Mercy. In the midst of the raging waters, there was bobbing that boat. Noah had separated himself from the wicked in the ways of the wicked, and now God had separated him from the judgment on those people. When we distinguish ourselves from the wicked and we are faithful to God, God will distinguish us from them when He judges them in the end. And there was Noah. How pointed the text is here. Only Noah was left. Indeed, he was the last man standing. How did that feel? We're not told. But do we have to be? After all that description? This must have been a terrifying experience. As the water exploded from underneath and the rains were unleashed from above, and the ark began to shift and creak and turn and be lifted up and tossed about, and the land just disappeared and only, as far as the eye could see, was churning water. Imagine how loud this was. And how that one would look out and see no life. This must have been humbling in the face of the sheer might demonstrated in this catastrophe. There would have been gratitude for their safety. Must have filled his heart. Possibly even a feeling of vindication and relief that such violence and evil was just removed from the earth. And, clearly seen by the statement made there, there would have been a sense of aloneness. And I use the word aloneness, not loneliness. That's more of an emotional condition, but aloneness. You can be alone and not be lonely. You can be lonely and be in a city of 1 million people. But definitely he was experiencing aloneness for all but his family were gone. Do you see how that this is like a reversal of the Adam experience? The world was beautifully crafted by God. Everything was set in place and was just pristine. And then Adam is dropped right in it. With Noah, the world around him was destroyed before his eyes. And he alone was left. Of course, he had the comfort of his family, his wife, his sons, and his daughters-in-law. But regarding Noah being alone, he was accustomed to that, wasn't he? Standing alone was something he already had been doing because he was righteous before God. And he was already the last man standing before the waters came. What a man, what an experience. So here's my question for you today. How well do you do standing with God alone? Noah, again, is described as being pleasing to God, which means there's no hint in Noah of a superiority complex. When we talk about an inferiority complex, there's also the problem of superiority complex. That's not in Noah, because that wouldn't have been pleasing to God. Self-righteousness, which so easily creeps in and takes over when we think the world is so bad and I'm trying to do the right thing. Self-righteousness is a poison that seeps in when you think, hey, I'm one of the few good ones. That's an attitude that's so repulsive to God. But that was not Noah. He maintained his righteousness in obedience to God without his righteousness becoming repugnant. Yet, he still, as Hebrews 11 verse 7 puts it, he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness that comes by faith. Some tough questions. If everyone around you had no regard for God, would you still believe? If the world was showing that they and that you should indulge all your passions, would you hold firm and serve God? If your whole world was turned upside down and swept away, would you still trust God? And if all the people who are so encouraging and helpful to you in your faith, if they were removed, or in the case of Noah, you never had him to begin with, would you still walk with God? The New Testament, especially the letters, are filled with how valuable it is to encourage and help one another as we serve Christ. But at the root of all that, we need to have a faith like Noah. This is, everyone else may ignore him, but I won't. I'll walk with him. These are hypotheticals for us. For Noah, they were real tests. And the truth is that in some measure, we all will be tested in similar form. And Noah passed, because he had deep and immovable faith. Evil did not sweep away Noah's faith. And when the great flood came, the waters didn't either. Though alone, there he was on that ark of salvation. Well, I didn't want to shortchange this Noah. So there's more to this narrative and more insight, more to gain. And so next time, Lord willing, we will look again at Noah and see what happens from this point on. If there is one here who understands the call of the gospel, and you, regardless of what others think, you believe in the truth of the gospel that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, provided to die for your sins, and you want to leave the world behind and follow Christ, we'll be happy to assist you as you do that today. You can let that be known as we stand and sing.